This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 759, brought to you by the Marvel Made Paragon Collection Chris Claremont Premier Bundle, available for pre-order now at getmarvelmade.com/iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing their masks. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 759. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
So much turkey is in my belly still, and it doesn't feel good.
And joining us this week, almost Dr. Ryan Haupt, to talk almost. About Power Rangers or something like that, whatever he's something from the 90s.
Yeah, I'm here. There were no Power Rangers books this week, but I'll talk about some other stuff.
I love that what we have here is like sleepy hangover Ryan. Like your voice sounds a little different. Yep. Like, I'll show up.
Well, Josh, it's been years since you've been on the post-Thanksgiving show. So it's what, true. Usually just Ryan and I.
I know. I thought I didn't have to perform for Josh. I thought it was just me and Connor.
That's how you think of it? Like you got to have two personas?
I mean, you were salty on the text thread. I was like, does Josh not like me anymore?
It's a stressful holiday week.
Yeah.
So we're here to talk about comics. Even as we wind towards the end of the year and things get punchy, we're still here to talk about comics. The ones we read every week in our stack. One of us picks the best one. They call it the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books in the week. We do the patron pick. We do some listener mail. We have a good time as we sit here lethargically. Oh, man. Yes, last night was... there was a point where I was like... I was too full, and then I was like, well, I could have one more plate.
It was bad, and then, like, Lindsay had made this pie, and she's like, we should eat. And I was sort of recovering, and then after I ate the pie, it was midnight, and she was like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know. I've never felt like this before.
The smart move we made was we didn't make the pie. We were going to make the pie this weekend for leftovers, but we were like, if we make the pie, we'll eat the pie, and then... all hell will break loose.
I mean, listen, it's New England. It's fall. The apples are amazing right now. Yeah. We made the pie. I know.
Remember that feeling. Here's your spoiler warning. There'll be spoilers, so it's a review show. Exercise some caution. Josh, you had the pick this week, and
I did.
I was both surprised and excited to see the pick, which is not the number you have on the script, but it's a didn't.
Oh.
Just in case you say it wrong.
It is Doctor Doom number 9 from writer Christopher Cantwell. Artist Salvador LaRocca and color by Guru EFX. I believe they added
it's an AI system. They just programmed it.
Check the sunbeam coefficient. Yes. And letterer Corey Pettit. I always feel like this series was over.
It's ending soon. I think it's.
I know. Like I feel like it was a mini series, and then another one comes out. I'm like, oh, it's still going. All right, cool. there was a very specific point where I decided that this was going to be pick of the week. And basically in the middle of the book, there is a 1, 2, 3, 4, four page scene where Reed Richards. Okay. I'll back up.
Well, hold on. Hold on before you get into it. This issue was awesome. It was so good. And I'm so happy. I think I might've been, I didn't even think about what I would have done. Cause it was a long stressful week, but this was an amazing issue.
Yeah. So there's this problem I don't fully understand, but there's some sort of black hole singularity issue that has to do with the moon and the planet and blah, blah, blah. Doom is like, I'm going to fix this, because he's having his crisis of consciousness where he, you know, through the whole series is like, I think I'm not a good guy and I need to be a good guy, but he's still a dick, but he's a very complicated and talented dick. And so he's going to fix it. And he's, you know, he's putting on I've got this. It's going to be, I'm going to figure it out. I've done everything perfectly. And Reed Richards calls up to the moon or wherever he is and is like, hey, I just wanted to say, you know, good luck. I really believe in you. And Doom is like, I don't need your concern. He's like, I'm not concerned. Well, why are you contacting me? And it's this incredibly childish exchange.
It's a devolution of his mind state, just from like supreme confidence about how he's going to save the world to talking himself into the idea that Reed is sabotaging him somehow.
Wait,
and it's
though,
just so perfectly Doom.
That scene is all posturing, and the whole time I'm trying to look into it, and I'm like, why is Reed being a dick?
Yeah, Reed had to have known better.
I don't know. I don't know, but I love
that's the great thing about it. I don't know. Yes. I think
it's ambiguous.
I think he wasn't. Why would he sabotage Doom? Doom's trying to save the world from this singularity.
Yes, but maybe it's a subconscious thing where he still had to poke him.
I think that's
they're
also
imperfect
possible too.
People.
Yeah.
So
I mean, they is go there a better poker in the entire Marvel universe than Reed Richards?
Dr. Doom.
Well, but he can stretch. I was making a stretch joke.
He can poke.
Oh, I see. Oh, wow. Wow, you woke up, I guess.
I'm here. I'm back.
So they go through the whole thing, and finally Reed's like, all right, this conversation's over. And Doom's like, as if you get to decide. And then he hangs up on him. And then Doom smashes his screen. And I was like, that was really fun to read. I read through it a few times, not because I didn't understand it, but I just wanted to make sure that I got all of it. Because it was pretty simple, really. It was just 6-panel grids, or 9. One dialogue balloon per page is, you know, just faces back and forth. But the best part of it was is that affects everything that happens after it.
Yep.
Because of Doom's own hubris. One of the things that happens in Marvel is that Doom talks a big game and he normally gets it right, even so. But lately, at least the trend has been like they have to have a begrudging respect for him. And I really like the place that he exists, is that he's not exactly a villain.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
At one point
he talks about how he's going to become a good guy, and it sort of harkens back to the infamous Doom, Dr. Doom, what was the run? Infamous Iron Man, the one, the Bendis run, where
Doom became Iron Man.
So it's kind of reminiscent of him deciding he's going to return to that Doom to be the good guy again, and this just totally scuttles that whole idea.
Well, the thing about that Doom, and I liked that series, but yeah, I think this is actually a little smarter. The thing about that Doom is that he was actually acting like a good guy, and a lot of his ego had been sort of sublimated. And in this, like, he's full Doom.
Yeah.
But he's just trying to point it differently. And, like, all of the self-doubt that comes in here because of a personal conflict and ego, it's much more like, you know, it's a little like Lex Luthor and Superman.
Yeah, for sure. And this is the heart of the character, right? The heart of the character is...
Yeah.
His ego gets in the way of everything. He and Reed are longtime colleagues, and they went to college together, so this is like a long-standing problem. You know.
But the difference between this and Superman is that Superman has no doubt, and he is not threatened at all by Doom, whereas this is more of a two-way street.
Yep.
Like, the people are much, you know, they're much more flawed, I guess. And as a result, like, this is always going on. And the fact that, like, Doom has a great relationship with Reed's daughter... Mm-hmm. Like, it's so fucked on so many levels. And I think that it really gets to what the intent of Fantastic Four was originally. But just the way that this was all sort of played out and written was just fantastically entertaining. And, you know, for a comic book, not a ton of action or anything. It was really mostly just people. It was just robot face having a conversation. And it was super fun. I think we've said, like, Salvador La Roca, he does great when he's just got to do robot faces.
Yeah.
He's totally fine.
Well, I do want to mention that after that four-page discussion, there's a two-page breakdown of Doom's, and then I love the page where it's him and the Doombot talking back and forth in that spiral with the
lasers
around the, you know, as he breaks down, like, oh, maybe Richards knows something, maybe somehow he knows this is going to fit, like, it's just you could just see it. You're just like, oh no, like it's just, oh, it's all over. And not that I was rooting for Doom. Well, I was rooting for him to save the world, obviously. But like, it just, it was, yeah. This was a perfectly constructed psychological breakdown of Doom issue.
It really got me thinking about the fact that, you know, Christopher Cantwell really has none of the problems that most people coming into comics from other people. Mm-hmm. It's not overwritten. It's pretty strong in terms of comic books. But I was thinking about what the through line of the work, guy's work that I know. And the egotistical alpha male is a constant. So you had that in Halt and Catch Fire. And the guy was usually right, too. That's the thing.
Sure.
You had that. He's doing Iron Man right now. Tony Stark is exactly that, just a different flavor. And you've got Doom. Like, that seems to be the guy's oeuvre, is what I realized as I was reading this. And I thought, that's really interesting. And he writes those characters really well. I mean, that Tony Stark that he does is great. It's not Robert Downey Jr. necessarily, you know. And you've got this. This was beautiful. This was like it's funny because I think it was a pick of the week before. I don't know if it was the one with Doom on a horse.
Yeah, it was issue 6, I believe, which was only 3 issues ago, but it came out like March.
Yeah.
Ryan, what did you think of this?
I enjoyed it. I've been reading it. You know, this is one of those books that I picked up only because you guys had started talking about it regularly enough that it seemed worth doing. I miss Kang.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Yeah. Well, Kang will be back.
That was why it was pick of the week. It was Kang.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I actually thought about that earlier. Was that I miss Kang, but at the other side, on the other side of it is the Doom Reed situation is just.
I mean, I love that the book opens up with like a panel of Doom just superimposed on himself, just running, and getting ready for the action, and then he's got like I know Salvador Larga references a lot of real technology when he's doing this stuff because he just has a space shuttle, which is also awesome.
Yeah, I thought and, that too.
And the big black hole thing is called the Ant Lion, which is, I love that name for a giant black hole that's going to destroy the Earth. That's fantastic. Blue Marvel is still in there, as far as we know, talking to alternate reality Otto Octavius. And I love that, like, you know, Salvador LaRocca is clearly referencing the new science that came out when they did Interstellar and actually spent enough money to figure out what black holes look like. So the black hole looks great. And yeah, I mean, it looks really good. The tension is right where it needs to be in terms of the interpersonal drama is arguably more important than what's happening with the black hole. And it's just, yeah, a lot of fun.
It's the only book I even came close to making pick. It was like in the middle of the book. I was like, oh, this is it. And it was nice. It made it real. I was like, it was like in the middle. So I was like, I got to read all these other books, but it's kind of pointless now.
Finishing this issue, I was like, oh, that was good. And then it's like, cause it like, honestly, if you've been reading this series the whole time, if you're a Fantastic Four fans as we are, and this Doom series has just been terrific. And you just mentioned it earlier, Josh, that this is sort of back to what the Fantastic Four was originally. It's a fucked up family, and he's the fucked up uncle of the family, and that relationship between Reed and him is just so delicious, and it makes sense. He's got he has a really great, healthy relationship with Valeria Doom as sort of her uncle, but he doesn't get along with her dad, and they're constantly getting in each other's way. And they just can't help it. And that's what's so great about it.
Also, there's one page in here where Reed Richards is talking to Captain America. And it's also a great little scene. It's just like, Reed is complaining about Doom to Steve Rogers. And he's just like, you know, but if it works, if we want it to be right. He's like, yeah, sure. You know, he bought an hour of prime time. Like, I'd love that they just, I mean, Reed is supposed to be the hero and he's just as bad.
Yeah, super petty.
Oh, that's great.
This was terrific. Doctor Doom number 9. Good time.
I don't even recommend you read just this issue. I recommend you make sure you read this whole series.
No, you have to read the whole series. Yeah. It's a build-up.
There's an issue where Doctor Doom rides a bear.
Yes.
It's fantastic. It's just as awesome as it sounds.
It's also like, it's just, there's quality Kang earlier. There's also like sparring that's going on there. It's just male superhero and supervillain ego unchecked.
I forgot about this, but I was reading up on Kang recently, as one does. You got to keep up with the latest.
Sure.
And I forgot that he's a descendant of Reed Richards. So it's just more of a...
That's not necessarily true.
Okay. It's
possibly true.
That's the thing.
He's not a descendant.
You never know.
He is a descendant. That's right.
He's like the great-great-grandson or something.
Great-great-great-great-grandson. Possibly.
So I think the Vegas odds makers, Josh, they had you at John Constantine Hellblazer number 12 as the pick of the week. I believe that was the favorite at the book.
Sure.
All the pick of the week betting houses in Vegas. Simon Spurrier, Aaron Campbell. This is the final issue of Hellblazer, this great run we've been loving. And I'm going to say this is one of my least favorite issues.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of really great things about it. But at the end, I'm not entirely sure what happened.
It was extremely convoluted. I was like, oh,
a bunch of times in the middle, I was not entirely sure what was happening.
Yep.
I got the main strokes, but I don't know if I knew why. Like, I knew what happened to the characters.
I was so excited for this book that it was the last book I read of all the comics
that came out this week.
That's how excited I was.
What kind of sound or face did you make as you got to the last page?
I thought the last page, the image of the last page was great. And I thought the idea of the price is always higher than the prize for what he does is a very Constantine and a great, great idea.
Yes.
But man, but I was just like, ugh. It was kind of like that. It was just like about quarter way through, I was like, oh no. And then halfway through, I was like, ugh, okay. And then by the end, it didn't take away my love for the whole series, which I think has been one of the best 12 issue runs that we've read over the last couple of years. But it wasn't a matter of my expectations being too high. I think I just think it was very convoluted.
I think it was a lot of jamming into a box. It's funny because a lot of times if you go 12 issues on something that's one single story, it feels too long. And it didn't. I think maybe they could have done another issue here. And I think that would have helped. It was on the chopping block. It's amazing that they made it to 12, but it really was like, I did all these things. It's like if it's Thanksgiving, right? And you want to make all this stuff and you fuck up the time. And then at the end, you've got to like rush through all the other things. They don't all fit. And then some things get cold or whatever. Yep. It felt like that. But
there's only so much hot gravy you can pour on the cold stuff to make it, you know.
Yeah.
Then you're just eating gravy.
It's just going to cool your gravy off, too, and then you got two problems.
Gravy is one of the worst.
You're absolutely right. Like, it goes from, man, that's delicious, to, oh, my God, rubber slime.
I made homemade one this year, and it was all... when I went to clean it up, it was like a Jell-O mold. It was just like it came out like in one piece.
Yeah, it should, if it's done right.
Oh, for sure. I'm just saying it was just funny. So let me just tell you what I think happened, Josh, and then you can tell me if I'm right, or if maybe you don't even know. And Ryan, you're not reading this, or you are reading this?
I read this.
Have you read the whole series?
I was a few issues behind, and I didn't fully get caught up, and then I looked at the clock, and I was like, I gotta record with these guys soon. I better jump ahead and see what's going on.
So, that must have been rough.
Yeah, it's fine.
So, the giant, I was gonna say the giant something, but the actual giant at the end of the last issue, who we thought represented England, who the members of Parliament were literally fucking, is a tulpa, which is a manifestation of a belief. And then it turns out that...
So I personally prefer the term egregore.
So is Old John? Old John's also a tulpa?
Who's manifested by young John himself.
Right.
Which doesn't
quite make sense.
Track given where we started.
With him being the literal John from the last continuity, who looked exactly like John in the last issue of that series.
We also find out that Noah is John's son from a one-night stand.
Right.
I feel like that had been hinted at earlier.
Yes, it had been. Okay. I think that one of the issues you skipped, Ryan, it was like the last issue of the issue before.
Okay. I liked using scrying to affect reality. Like, if scrying is powerful enough, if you know what you're doing, you can reach through the scrying pool and manipulate things. That was kind of cool. But I feel like that was the big conclusion to that story, and then a whole another story got tacked onto the end of it.
Did Noah kill the yoga dude?
Yeah, Willow Tree. Yeah, he did. Because he'd gotten possessed, I think.
Well, that's right, Ryan. You were on the show and we talked about the yoga dude. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was your pick of the week. And you were like, this guy's a dipshit. And now they killed him. I was like, how do you feel now, Connor?
Well, yeah, Connor. I
didn't want him to get stabbed by Noah.
Yeah.
I did like the scene where Noah and the Scottish chick made out.
No, not Noah. Willowtree.
Willowtree. Yeah. That's right. And John's like, no, don't. Oh. Glass is watching through the scrying, but there were moments like that, and I enjoyed this. But I'm just looking through it now. I'm just like, oh man, there's a lot of spells going on.
So much of it's funny because if you ask me, I'll tell you that my favorite run is the Garth Ennis stuff, and it has to do with all the character work in there. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember any of the magic stuff really, and so in this, the character work stuff and sort of those storylines is actually pretty good. This you meet this other guy, and he's really charming depending on your point of view, and he's sort of doing his magic, and John's both a little bit intimidated by him and also doesn't like him but also kind of does. And what gets this guy in the end is that it's hubris again, like he just thinks he can do more than he can, and it really backfires on him. Mm-hmm. And normally John is the agent for that. Like, John is the one who will push somebody into a situation.
It's almost like he was watching the story end. Like, he wasn't involved in the ending. I mean, realize he was in the spellcast, but it seemed like he was removed from the ending of the story, which is weird.
And when he had Noah take him out, John's big regret is, like, I just made him kill something, which damns his soul, which I think is a nice touch. But when John is doing that to people, normally he's aware of it. Like he's very aware that he's manipulating somebody for what he thinks is the greater good, but will ultimately means that all of his friends get killed. And it didn't quite follow that path, because the stuff that Willow Tree did were really as the result of his own issues. And did John call them in?
No, he was talking early in the issue about how, like, the one thing you never should do when messing with the kind of magic he does is volunteer, and Willow Tree was eager to rush in, and I think that was kind of what they were playing at, was, you know, like, this guy ended up being the one who got sacrificed because he was so willing to show up and volunteer himself, and that's what gets you killed.
So following all that, John, like you said, John didn't really have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
He didn't, you know, and when he got Noah to do it, that was really... Yes, he put a bad thing on his son, but that was also the only thing that could happen, or this demon was going to break through to Earth and everything would be terrible.
Right.
You know, he basically, it's like when the guy in the party gets bit by the zombie, somebody's got to kill him. Right. And he just had his son do it rather than him. But that's not the same thing.
No, yeah.
You know, again, it's not bad, but like if you've been reading Constantine for a really long time, I was like, it just doesn't quite. But so in the middle of all that, I think that's actually generally pretty good character stuff and pretty good plotting. But sort of sussing out what was actually happening to make those things happen was really difficult with this. And I think Aaron Campbell, the artist, has been wonderful on this. But once everything starts glowing and swirling and moving, and there's a bunch of different voices, and I think the letterer actually, you know, did a lot, because there's a bunch of different types of word balloons and the coloring, and you can sort of very clearly tell who's talking.
The coloring, Drew Corley, Jordy Belair, obviously.
I mean the coloring of the letter. But
Adita Bidikar's letter. But probably Jordy Belair also colors the letters. I don't know. Probably not.
No, that's not how that works.
That's not how it works anymore.
I mean, it's possible that they collaborated
No longer on the page.
Right. Yeah. No, the letters go on last.
In my head, I like to think they're still pasting up in a bullpen somewhere. That's how I like to think about the world. That's what's going on in my head.
You know, good, but not great, I think. And it had been great.
It wasn't a bad issue. I was just like my least favorite ones. There may be two out of the 12 where I thought, no, that's not as good. But otherwise, great series.
Yeah, totally.
Great gift to us out of nowhere, us being the world of comic readers.
Yeah. What's funny is you weren't even really like a Hellblazer reader.
No, but it was out. I think it was a patron pick, or you liked it so much. I think maybe that was it. I just thought, oh, I'll give it a shot. I've read the Garth Ennis run. I brought all those trades from you that one year and read them all. It was great. I mean, and Constantine's all over DC right now.
Yeah, but this, no, he's not.
Maestro number 4. Talk about another fun series out of nowhere. Peter David, Herman Peralta, Jesus Albertov, and Ariana Mar. This is the issue where, I mean, in the last issue, the Hulk is basically making his turn, but here he becomes the Maestro, which is the despotic villain of the future that he has to destroy himself in a 1992 miniseries from Peter David and George Perez, where the Hulk travels to the future and destroys himself. So this is the origin story of the Maestro. And here he defeats Hercules.
Well, yeah, but I think what was interesting about this, and this has been super fun.
Yeah.
Just really fun. And I have no history with this or whatever. I just know, you know, it's a future Marvel story and the Hulk is in the, you know.
It's funny,
and
Ryan was on for the last issue of this.
I must have been on exactly a month ago.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Or 2 weeks ago, whenever this came out. I don't remember.
Yeah, who can say? You know, and Hulk goes in there, and he's apparently humiliated and just sort of he's chastened by Hercules. Like, and Hercules was never in any doubt about it. And we were like, well, Hulk is the strongest one there is, which was referenced.
Well, the thing is, like, he, you know, the last issue, he had his big plan, right, Hulk? He was going to go off, build these giant robot dogs, and they were going to attack. And they attack here, and Hercules pretty much dispatches them without a problem. And then he does to Hulk what Hulk did to Loki in the Avengers movie, which was slam him back and forth by his feet, back and back and back and back.
And destroyed a gyro shop in doing so. Very sad.
Which is closely related to shawarma.
But also Herc is, you know, Greek.
Yeah. And so then we get this little, he beats him, and he's like, all right. And Hercules, to his credit, although not at all woke, I must point out, very antiquated ideas about women, but you know, what are you going to blame him for? He's a Greek god. Anyway, he invites him back, and Hulk's like, "No, I haven't earned it. I can't do that. I'll make amends and return to someplace." And you know, and Hercules is like, "All right, cool. We're all good, bro." We cut to this one scene is that Rick Jones, or is that like a Rick Jones fan?
No, it's Rick Jones.
Okay, so Rick Jones like basically tells us, "Yeah, that Bruce Banner you met, that's only one Bruce Banner. There's another one, and he's a right fucking bastard."
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that he needed to say. You know, and so we see later, you know, Hulk Beard Hulk comes back and presents Hercules with a lady. And then you just sort of see his master stroke, you know, because he can't win, because not only is he the strongest one there is, he's also, he's like the most intelligent. He's up there in terms of Marvel, mm-hmm. you know, as Banner, and, you know, just takes the whole thing down with a perfectly executed plan. And there is such a turn that happens in this issue that I really liked that part.
Yeah, it was great. It's going to be interesting because they did announce a sequel, because I guess this is selling well, which was funny because when it first came out, we were like, who's going to buy this? Apparently people will buy it.
I mean, if it makes sense that like a lot of the audience is the same people who were the audience when this was coming out originally, then yeah, that makes sense.
But there's not a lot of places it can go because we know the ultimate conclusion of the story because we read it 30 years ago, but it'll be interesting to see where it goes. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Despite the fact you're watching the Hulk become a monster, he already is a monster in some ways.
Another Fringe book. Two Fringe books.
And Jesus, we talked before, Jesus Alberto, Jesus the Colors. Herman Peralta is incredible.
Yeah, it's great.
He's really good. Totally. We haven't talked about Injustice Year Zero in a while. Injustice Year Zero 12 from Tom Taylor and Cian Tormey.
Kine. If it's Irish, that's a hard C usually.
Yeah, Kine. I thought this issue was great. Again, we talked about not liking what we're reading, even though we're enjoying it, in terms of the fact that this is all about the Justice Society getting killed by the Joker, but in terms of well-executed plans and foreboding and seeing it all unfold, and you're just like, no. I thought this was really well done, and I thought the art was really good. There's a couple of really terrific panel constructions. There's the shot through the Flash's legs as he cleans up the floor of the Batcave, because Alfred is like, you messed up the floor. And so he hands him a handkerchief to clean it. And then the plan to save the Justice Society goes horribly wrong at the end. I thought this was just a great issue in terms of unfolding story.
I mean, yeah, they all have been. And it's actually just finished. I just finished the first book of Injustice, so I sort of am up to where they are after this. Mm-hmm. And I know one thing, the art on this is so much better than what is in that, you know, because they have some support. It's the same thing. Actually, I know what's going to happen.
Right.
Like, I know how this ends, but it is still so wonderfully plotted, and the characters are just so excellent. And again, like, I don't like anything that's happening in it, but it's real good.
What's funny is, like, I have no sense of how long this is going to go, because it's issue 12, so normally you think that'd be the end, but these are half issues.
Uh-huh. Right.
They're not going to go 24 issues.
Right.
I mean, they're running out of characters. This seems like the climax, sort of.
I got to tell you, through all of this stuff, the thing that Tom Taylor does best, and I think it's his secret sauce, is Green Arrow and Mockingbird. I mean, like, literally, he's in all of them. He's all through Deceased. He's all through Injustice. He's through this. Mm-hmm. It's what he does best. I mean, that's the series he just should be doing.
Mm.
You know, when it happens at some point. It's the creepiest Joker, too. I'm sick of Joker and everything, but in this, I'm like, okay, this is a real
There's something threat. Really disturbing about seeing him in, like, a supervillain costume.
Yeah.
And he has sort of a clown makeup face. It's not, you know, Heath Ledger clown makeup. But it's also not like your traditional Joker. He's got like the painted on face. It's just weird.
Kind of Jack Nick.
Yeah, actually, I got caught up on this because you guys have talked about it enough times. I've never played any of the Injustice games, so I have no context there. And I'm, you know, the strength of Tom Taylor's writing on other books. And it's, man, I miss the Justice Society.
Yeah.
Dr. Midnight, fantastic.
But also,
Amazing
like,
Man, just great.
As we said before, this is much like Deceased. These are the classic versions, right? So they're all relatively speaking in their classic costumes or something very similar, which I know is a problem, Josh, from what I've been heard in the Injustice book, because they all look stupid.
That's the other thing. That's absolutely clear. And I think it's a good choice here to just be like, you know what, let's just ignore that part. Because, you know, the others, I think they were definitely tying in with the video game and there was a branding thing here. Yeah. Nobody gives a shit. So just draw them the way that they should be.
Right. I just thought this was a lot of fun. I flew through this issue in a great way because the pacing it does. They're doing an investigation, so there's a great little montage of Batman investigating in the middle, and then there's a great meeting with the Justice Society and the Justice League about what they're going to do. And then
Ryan, did you read a bunch of these all at once?
Yeah.
I bet that works really well.
It was good. It was fun.
Yeah, totally a page turner. Also, it's Keen. I should have occurred to me. Just it's Keen. That's an Irish. Keen. All right.
Well,
Gillian Keen. All those things.
You can't bury the past forever. Endless winter.
So, this episode is... Are you just writing bleak poetry?
That's the ad for Endless Winter at the end. I was just staring at it. And that's sort of like the whole tagline for comics.
It'd be great if Connor just like got really maudlin and poetic about everything. Should we go on with the show? like the ash covers the plain, burn the forest. Let's talk about the Marvel Made Paragon Collection. That's Marvel's newest prestige product, exclusive to the Marvel Made platform, celebrating Marvel's most iconic writers and artists, featuring the most revered Marvel comic storylines and noteworthy moments over the years. The very first of this collection will start with a premiere bundle from none other than Marvel Comics legend Chris Claremont from now through December 4th. So if you're listening to this, you could literally almost listen to this later in the week and miss it.
But also, from what we've been told, they told us they're very close to fulfilling this.
Yeah.
If you're on the fence at all and want it, they're not going to do it unless they get the number of pre-orders, the 1,200 pre-orders.
There's a pre-order element. They will go over that. And I can see why there's a pre-order element, because it's a pretty special book. So they got to get to 1,200. So if you were on the fence or not thinking about whether you wanted to do it, now's the time to place that order so you can make sure that you get across the line and get it. The Marvel Made Paragon Collection Chris Claremont Premier Bundle is a gorgeous faux leather hardcover book that's hand-numbered and signed by Chris Claremont. It includes one of four handwritten iconic quotes from the X-Men stories. Like, just a picture of him around going, bub, okay?
How many people get bub?
Oh, man, I'd want the bub one. But maybe there's a better one. Professor Xavier is a jerk.
Yeah.
He must have written that line.
Probably.
Listen, okay. This collection feature, that'd be great. It has behind the scenes forward by Louise Simonson.
Nice.
She's a legend. A wonderful creator. Right. Yeah, yeah. Collects classic mutant epics, including, and this is really what I was like, oh, yeah, what? And then I was, wow, that's a lot. Dark Phoenix Saga, Days of Future Past, the Wolverine limited series illustrated by Frank Miller, which. That was the whole thing.
It's a great
series. Amazing.
Yeah.
Frank Miller was kind of still doing a little cartooniness, and it was Arch, and it was great.
Yeah.
That was one of the first issues I ever bought, like that first issue that I like saved money to buy for. I got that
was
one
of the first trades I ever owned as a kid. I think it was one of Marvel's first collected editions.
I believe so. Uncanny X-Men number 268, which is an iconic story featuring Captain America and Black Widow. X-Men number 1 by Jim Lee, the best-selling comic in the world of all time. In this are lithographs and comics from all new. From renowned artists as a Wolverine limited series homage litho by Joe Quesada. Great artist. People forget that.
Yep.
Dark Phoenix Saga homage by Phil Noto, who's just amazing. Oh, Inferno homage litho by Phil Tan. You've got X-Men Claremont collage litho by Salvador La Roca. Storm and Callisto battle homage litho by Marcos Martin. Asgardian Wars homage litho by Art Adams, a legend. I had an Art Adams Wolverine poster on my wall as a kid.
All these artists are terrific, and Art Adams is underrated. I think most people these days don't know that because...
He got out.
He's a bigger deal 20, 30... Like, Ryan, do you have much in the way of reverence for Arthur Adams?
I respect the work, and I've read most of these old X-Men comics that you guys are talking about, but I don't know that I have any special feeling towards him.
Yeah, he was a big deal in like the early 90s. Late 80s, early 90s. He was like a level up above a lot of people, and then he just stopped doing stuff.
All right, guys.
Sorry.
I have a lot left to describe about this book, and we got to get
on
with the
show. It's just stretching up a lot of memories, which is, I think, why it's so popular. Continue.
Exclusive Wolverine number 6, Days of Future Past, themed variant cover comic book by Olivier Coipel. X-Men 13, Dark Phoenix action figure variant comic book by John Tyler Christopher. It is the world debut of a 20-page exclusive prequel comic for Days of Future Past, written by Claremont and drawn by Salvador La Roca. And that's not all. In addition to the comic and the lithos, the bundle includes Claremont's original Days of Future Past notes and script and brand new behind-the-scenes interviews with Claremont about his most iconic and shocking X-Men stories. Do not miss out on this collection. You have until the 4th of December to pre-order. It is $199 plus tax and shipping. Along with a bundle, you'll get the Marvel Made Paragon Collection Certificate of Authenticity. Bundles will begin shipping in March 2021. So $199, not cheap, but for all of that in a damn custom product, that's a really good price. I work in printing. I know how that works. There's the original material. There's great old material in there. Go to getmarvelmade.com/ifanboy to pre-order your copy of the Marvel Made Paragon Collection Chris Claremont Premier Bundle. There you go.
Josh is impressed by this.
I am. They've done original art for it. It's a feat of editing and putting all that stuff. And they're not even sure they're going to make it. So I'm guessing they will, because that's, you know.
They put a lot of elements together.
Yep.
Daredevil 24. Chip Zdarsky. Was it Mike Hawthorne? Mike Hawthorne.
Yeah, yeah, which I was like, oh, Mike Hawthorne.
Dan Perkins.
This is another example of, I thought it was really well done and the issue was good, but I just hate what they're doing and I think it's stupid.
I think I'm right there with you. I was like, I don't like any of this, but it's real good.
I laughed when Daredevil walked into court with his suit over his costume.
Yeah. Which
I thought must have been really hot.
When he gets out of those suits are breathable. Unstable molecule, probably on the other suit too. When he gets out, like, this is the first time you see the suit and he's actually got his hands in his pocket, but he's still got his Daredevil gloves on and his head is like hung over like sad Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How does he know that Tony Stark is calling on his cell phone when he flips it open and looks at it?
Good question.
Ooh,
good question.
Maybe, because I know that you can put custom.
Well, he says he's the only one who has the number, so I guess that's the Tony Stark phone.
Custom ringtones.
So Matt's carrying around just loads of phones, and a bunch of other heroes out there only have the number, and he's got to recognize the vibration.
Well, he's setting up something with Tony to buy Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah,
so
I thought that was maybe. Yeah, that was a weird.
So he just had scheme. It for that.
Yeah, he had like, it for that to hear where the deal was done. Yeah.
It's an old flip phone, too, which I don't know that would survive. None of them survive his antics, but it's fine. And then Tony fails.
I'm still enjoying this series. This is the first issue Mike Hawthorne's done, right?
Yeah.
This is a switch. And I generally like Mike Hawthorne's art. I thought there were a few weird storytelling issues, sort of like the cell phone thing. And there's another scene where, like, when he first walks into the courtroom, he's like, oh, just like I thought, it's a zoo, and everybody is just sitting calmly doing nothing. Like, it's...
it's not even that crowded. There's a lot of empty seats.
No!
Like, you could sit next to Captain America.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even realize that, but you're totally right. It's not...
I'll say it. I think that the art felt very hastily done.
Yeah, it did.
It had an inker on it who was not helping Mike Hawthorne all that much. He's a great artist.
Smooth as
I don't know who the colorist is, but it was a little... It felt hasty. It felt rough.
I also don't... This is one of my Daredevil blind spots. I have no attachments to Typhoid Mary as a character. Yeah. Don't didn't any of the classic stories. Don't really know what she is or can do.
And her hair reminds me of, like, those old Matt Wagner villains, and it just feels, like, antiquated. Anyway.
Yeah, so in case you're not reading this, the culmination of this entire storyline, which in the background has not been enjoying that part of it, is he accidentally killed a guy, and here he goes to trial, and he surprises his lawyers by pleading guilty to second-degree manslaughter. Matt is a dick, by the way. Like, that's always the thing. Like, he's a dick to his friends here. He goes behind their backs. Yeah. He makes a deal. He doesn't tell them about it.
Presumably for no other reason than to shock comic book readers, too. The big problem with it, though, is that the very end of it is like he's in prison. I was like, that's great. But one of the longest and most famous Daredevil arcs of my life, which wasn't that long ago, concluded with Daredevil being in prison. And, yeah. You know, it's a Bendis little run, it's a little also run.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like homage as much as like, you're doing this again?
I did enjoy the idea that they had to use Matt's stupid twin brother, who I hate as a concept, to pretend to be Matt because no one would believe that Matt wouldn't be there for Daredevil. So, like, he has to sort of just be in the office, and his ex is like, you're not even doing anything. He's like, I'm doing lawyer stuff. You know, doing a lot of important lawyer stuff because he doesn't know, he's not a lawyer. So that was funny. I mean, there's been elements of this I've really enjoyed. And I thought this issue was well done and written well. But again, I just think it's stupid. I think this is another thing like Damian and Superman's secret identity, where it's like you don't realize what Pandora's box you're opening up here by having them able to prosecute superheroes. You know, they have to sort of exist outside of the regular real world. Too many real world consequences applied to superheroes makes them less special.
Yeah, Astro City did a really good issue on that.
Yeah.
Where like some defense attorney figured out they could say like, oh, it was a magic clone. And like it was all about the legal system having to figure out how to grapple with the world of the fantastic of superheroes and stuff. Kurt Busiek. He knows he's doing.
I think you just can't put too many real-world elements into the superheroes, and then they start to become less, but that's just me. Another Fringe book. Anybody else read Falcon and the Winter Soldier, number 5, or this miniseries, because this is the final issue?
I did not know it was a thing. I saw you put it up, and I thought, is this something I should have been reading?
Yes.
I read the first issue, and I just... Falcon's shoulder pads, I just can't get past them, and I just... the more I can avoid them, I will.
They're less emphasized here, but yeah, they're dumb. This issue has been really fun. Another one of those Marvel Fringe books that we've been talking up this year. I think Falcon and Bucky as a team are terrific. I know that this was put out because they thought they'd have a Falcon and Bucky TV show out on Disney Plus by now, but doesn't matter why. It's just been this romp. And yeah, Zemo's in it. It's just been this romp where they've been tracking this like super killer from Hydra who wiped out a government agency, and it turns out he's like a big Captain America fan. Like he's like a super fanboy, but he's a psychopath, so he takes all the wrong lessons from Captain America. So they've been trying to bring him back to the path of good throughout this whole series, and they're dealing with this turncoat Hydra. And this issue was really fun because there's a schism in Hydra, and so there's this standoff between Zemo and this woman who's trying to become Hydra Supreme, Veronica Eden, and you know that she's got her own forces inside his forces, so she's like hidden behind the cars or shooting at her, and she goes, hey, if any of my guys are in there, Order 66, which is a Star Wars reference, and so they start shooting at each other, and so it becomes this like kind of goofy inner Hydra war, and then at the end of it, Zemo's like, I respect all your hustle. Like, he's not even that mad at her. She tried to take over, he would do the same thing, and it just was really fun, and I don't know who Derek Landry is. I think I've seen his name before. The Federico Vincentini art has been really good.
I think it's just Sean Murphy.
It's high octane. It's Sean Murphy-esque. And I think anyone who's been enjoying the Marvel French books should check this out. It was a lot of fun. It was a little five-issue miniseries.
Ryan. Action Comics is a book that also came out this week, and it was written by Brian Michael Bendis with art by John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson on inks and Brad Anderson on colors or letters.
Yeah.
One of the two. Are you still reading this, either of you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you guys I think it's kind of a mess, but I'm still...
Well, obviously didn't like the... And we talked about this before, that this issue ends with the tie-in to the Jimmy Olsen series, which, you know... Whatever.
That came out of left field, although they were hinting at it a couple issues ago when Jimmy was trying to get Perry's attention about stuff. I really like John Romita Jr. I'm struggling a little bit with the way he's handling some of these characters. Like, there's a lot of kind of melty faces.
It's not good.
Weird hair.
I want it to be good. I really like him a lot. And I don't know if that's just how he's getting inked, whether these are choices, if that's Klaus Janson trying to bring it back or whatever. Like, but it's... You know, if you compare this to what Romita was doing, you know, 10 years ago.
Well, but even here's the thing, though. He did Superman Year One.
Mm-hmm.
It was only a handful of years ago. It wasn't that many years ago with Frank Miller. Yeah. And that looked amazing. Mm-hmm. So the question is, did he have a lot of time to work on Superman Year One and doesn't have a lot of time to do these issues? Like, I always hate to prescribe, like, this looks rushed. I don't know if he, you know.
I don't know.
I agree with you guys. It's not his best work, but he's still capable of doing it unless he drew that miniseries 10 years ago, which I don't think he did.
Yeah.
It's still there. I just don't know if this is just a scheduling issue.
He always works with an inker.
He's always
working. And it's not always the same guy. Sometimes it's Janson. Sometimes it's Danny Meeke. Sometimes it's other guys. It's usually a couple of those.
I think Danny Meeke did Year One, didn't he?
I believe so. And then, so that also has to do with how long the inker has to do it.
Right.
Romita has worked with Bendis before, and that has always been some of my least favorite stuff. And I don't know. I just think maybe they're not a great match. Because basically, you've got all these scenes where Superman is then surrounded by these other people, forcing them to, you know, put these weird sort of group shots over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that works best for him.
It's a lot of shots of just the five of them hovering and then red blurs as they fly around and do stuff.
Yeah. Like, group shots are not his thing. It just isn't. Like, it never has been. I think that's why he didn't fit on Avengers a really long time ago. You know, a lot of the facial acting and stuff in this is pretty good and interesting, but all the shots are kind of the same. Like, it's all the same angles, the same stuff, you know, with the conversation.
I also laughed out loud when I saw the difference in the logo between John Kent Superboy and Connor Kent Superboy is just that Connor Kent is red and John Kent is blue. That's dumb.
I like the bit where Brainiac tells Supergirl's secret. I like that stuff in comics. Leave the breadcrumbs. Don't tell us what it is. Is this the new closet? Maybe it is, or maybe we'll actually find out what's going on. But it's nice to give them a little story bit that we don't know about that maybe they can use in the future.
Josh, I know you like time travel stuff. Mm-hmm. John Kent keeps telling, like, Brainiac, like, I'm going to hang out here with my dad for the rest of the day. Like, I'll be back tomorrow. And it's like, but he could still just go back to the same moment Brainiac just jumped to. Like, he doesn't have to come back. He doesn't have to come back a day later just because he waited a day in the past.
Listen, we do not have time for this.
All right, sorry.
Really, like, genuinely. I just like that we're wrapping up this Red Mist and the lady, and they kind of explained it, and I'm fine. Let's go. All right.
But I feel like I feel like he keeps, you know, he was doing it in Young Justice, and then he kind of switched it over to here, where he was trying to do something with Connor Kent for a while, and then that sort of just went away, and then Supergirl just randomly showed back up a couple issues ago. And I'm having a hard time. There's a lot of threads in this book. I'm not having a hard time keeping them straight because Bendis is a competent storyteller, but I'm having a hard time figuring out what is the actual through line of this book and what I'm supposed to actually be invested in and care about.
All of it.
I think the time travel thing was more like, I'm not going with you right now. I'll leave tomorrow. It wasn't like he was saying, I'll be there tomorrow. It was more like, I'm not coming with you at this very moment.
Disagree.
Guys, This is the short section of the show.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about. There was a lot of books. It was a lot to read on a holiday week in which there was a lot going on. Honestly, I'm surprised we all read our books. In the past, we haven't read all the books because this is the nature of Thanksgiving. But I got them all done. I think I ended up with 20 books, which was more than I anticipated. But let's talk about the patron pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. All patrons can do so, no matter what level they're at. And this week, the vast majority, the overwhelming winner, was The Other History of the DC Universe, book one, from John Ridley, Giuseppe Camuncoli, Andrea Gucci. My eyes are still blurry from waking up. Jose Gucci. Villaruba, and Steve Wands. And this is a Black Label release. It was announced a while ago. John Ridley is a big-time screenwriter. He won an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave.
But he's done comics in the past.
He's a veteran. He's not like a new guy. Yeah, he's done comics before. And I think, based on the title, and I'm going to just tee this up so we can talk about it. After Crisis on Infinite Earths finished in 1986, DC put out a two-issue prestige miniseries called The History of the DC Universe, which was basically Marv Wolfman and George Perez resetting the board after Crisis so that you got the timeline, you got how things happened. And it was told in vignette style, like this happened, then this happened, then this happened, and the Justice Society showed up. It was literally like a timeline in comic form. And I loved it as a kid. I read it over and over and over and over and over and over again to get the sense of DC and the timeline and everything, and that was exciting. And so this seems to be a take on that. It's not quite because it just follows one character, but it seems to be that's what they're going for here in the blocks of text that go along with a single image or two images or three images. Not so much a story. That seems to be what they're doing here.
I had no idea about any of that. Mm-hmm. I just started reading it.
Right.
Now, Connor had said to me, please make time for this. And I was like, oh, come on.
I only said that to you because I had just read it. It took me almost an hour.
No, I know. No. It wasn't you.
I didn't want you to wait for like 20 minutes before the show and be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, no, this was a good, it was a good piece of advice. I actually read it sort of first, but it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I looked and I was like, it's 44 pages. How long? And I started going. And he's like, I see. So I was kind of annoyed about that. However, at no point did I not like it.
Oh, it was very well written.
So, like, as I was reading through it, I was like, I didn't really feel like reading a novella right now. But if I have to, this isn't so bad. And the fact is, I don't know anything about Black Lightning.
Yeah, this is all about Black Lightning. I didn't tee that up. This is about Jefferson Pierce's life from 1972 to 1995. Now, I hate when they add real dates to things, but whatever. This is its own thing. Doesn't matter. This is the history of Jefferson Pierce's life and career.
So placing it in that timeline, though, I think gives everything context, sort of who he is and where he came from. And it's probably correct with when the character was introduced, I'm guessing.
Probably, yeah.
So, you know, I think because we're tying this into history and we're tying it into a social mood, you know, as we go through, you know, 1968 and we go through the early 70s into the 80s, like it all kind of works. One of the things I think was really interesting is that unlike Spider-Man, where we are told to accept the fact that it's Marvel time and it's super and it doesn't matter if he has two jobs and is Spider-Man. This, they showed the real-world consequences of doing those things.
Right. By the way, Black Lightning was introduced in 1977.
So that kind of makes sense. So was I, actually.
Yeah. April.
Yeah.
You just beat him.
Yep. But he did get to live at the same time as Elvis. So April. And you get it a month before Star Wars came out. I could go on. Anyways, I'm going to be putting on Pink Floyd's Animals and then Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. Sorry, there's a lot of great albums that came out that year. I really liked it. I think the writing was actually particularly strong, and it's sort of like strode this line between, you know, very genuine, real emotions that African Americans, you know, have today and had then. And it's sort of terrifying and disappointing at the same time. And it really shines a light on, like, well, you know, it's like the old Denny O'Neill line, like from the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series. Like, I've seen you with the blue skins and the purple skins, but what have you done for the black skins? You know, and there's a lot of that there where, you know, like, you know, Superman doesn't even come to our side of town. And I thought, would he or would he not? But it doesn't matter because it's the perspective. Like, it doesn't feel like he does. He doesn't fix anything. They could fix everything. And basically Jefferson Pierce is like, well, enough of this. I'm fixing it if nobody will. There's a lot here.
I like that they went through the history of the DC universe, like, as it says. Like, first of all, I thought the art team did a great job of having its own style, but when it came to recreating important elements from DC, they did it in that style. So there's the shot of the first time John Stewart's introduced, which is from the cover of that book that Neil Adams drew, and it looks like Neil Adams. I really liked Jefferson's complicated relationship with John Stewart. You know, he's first he's looked at as, hey, one of us is a hero, and then it's, well, is he? They meet and it doesn't go well, and then it's not till much later that he finds out about Cosmic Odyssey and what John went through there and trying to commit suicide and finally hanging out and understanding each other was I like that as an arc in the background.
That was really great.
Which was, as much as it was uncomfortable, which was supposed to be, his reaction to Superman is not what you normally get in DC Comics. You know, he's not venerating Superman at all. And then the Batman stuff with the Outsiders was interesting as well. Like, he finally finds sort of a family in these outcasts.
I really liked that there was development on all those things. Yeah. It wasn't just like introduce the concept of Superman comes around in the beginning and, oh, this guy's an asshole. And like the character of Jefferson Pierce, like, his character didn't change and his overall worldview didn't change, but he allowed new ideas and he allowed the fact that, you know, his perspective could shift. And I thought that was really good.
I don't know if this has always been an aspect of the character or not, but I like that his powers are something he really has to keep in check and hold back with. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this year we've all learned a lot about what other people are going through in this country. And the idea of a really powerful black man having to constantly not overdo it around other people to keep himself and others safe, I think speaks volumes and is a powerful metaphor for what a lot of people have to go through. And I really loved the scene when the kid shows up in the black lighting costume for a trick or treat and what that means to him. And I also think that, you know, in my own life living in D.C., you know, majority minority city, like, when the Spider-Man movie came out with Miles, like, that was huge. And you did see kids dressed up in costume, and it was really powerful, and it was really fun. I love those little touches like that. Those, I think, make the emotional beats really hit home.
I was actually really curious, Josh, what you'd think about this, because this is so unlike what you normally like to read. But I think the power of the writing sort of carried through the format.
I mean, there's a lot to think about. There's a historical aspect of what, you know, this guy fits in. Then there's the way of how it fits with today. There's a bit in here that's just brilliant. Where Reagan is elected and you see his button where it says, "Let's make America great again," which, by the way, was Reagan's logo, because
that was his slogan.
You know, and it has the Watchmen blood drip on it.
Yeah.
I was like, holy, that's a lot going on right there. It's just like the more things stay the same, but also kind of fits together with a really, you know, we haven't talked about the art at all. Different layouts by Giuseppe Camuncoli and finishes by Andrea Cucci. And it's a different kind of art. Like you said, I can't see the Giuseppe Camuncoli in this, but it worked with the type of book it is, you know, like it. I thought it did a really good job.
I mean, there's parts where they're doing Aparo during the Outsiders bit, because Aparo was the main artist on that. So like, it looks like Neil Adams in that bit where Batman's jumping off the railing, but then the rest of the page looks just like Aparo. And then they're doing a Mignola.
I mean, the Cosmic Odyssey, has that old school Mignola style that like most people who have only read Hellboy probably don't even know about, where he was like Kirby-esque.
Yeah,
I would say
it was really beautiful. I thought. I mean, I thought that the homages worked in the scenes, but then the rest of the story, the regular story, you know, had its own look. It was, and then even when Supergirl shows up, it looks like Kurt Swan a little bit.
Mm. There's a whole bit about, like, man, Supergirl's great. And I was like, why? What happened? I don't know if there was some reason for that, but it's kind of stood out.
I did like that he didn't like Superman, but he could sympathize with him being alone. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, not, and being the only one of his kind. Like, I just thought that was an interesting take on him.
I just liked how he went from a young man who was very sure about everything and very rigid and very, you know, like, no, this is the way it is and I'm right and you're wrong, to, you know, an older, probably middle-aged man who's like, all right, I need to just soften some of that, because I'm just too harsh.
That's the arc of life, isn't it?
It should be. I mean, I wish it would start sooner.
Yeah, I thought this was good. This is really good.
Yeah.
It took me an hour to read, but it was good.
Yeah. I mean, I think it gives you a lot for that. If it's like one of those 80-page, you know, anthologies where you're just sort of struggling through it, and half of them are good and half of them aren't. But, you know, it was a lot of time commitment, certainly for a holiday weekend. And I will hate you for that.
Yeah, I'm definitely not happy with the patrons.
That's why I sent the note out to you guys. I didn't want either of you to wait to the last second and be screwed. So I was like, guys, just
make... I was going to be mad at them either way.
Just make sure you have enough time to read that.
But it was good. I can't bitch about that. You know, I probably wouldn't have read it otherwise. So fair play.
So that's the patron pick. The other history of the DC Universe, book one, ratings.
Ryan, why don't you go first?
Out of five.
I'd probably go 4.5.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what I go with, 4.5.
I'm going to go 4.25.
Oh, there you go.
4.25.
4.25.
Is there another one of these?
I believe so.
Okay, because this was book one, apparently.
Well, all of Black Label books are written that way, but I don't know.
Right.
Again, all right. Don't read the news.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something, though. There's no way that it could be as interesting if we're picking up from where it left off.
No.
No way.
It's a natural ending of his story.
Yeah, I hope this just becomes a feature to highlight the, you know, more diverse characters within the DC universe. Like, if you give me this on Michael Holt,
I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be diverse characters or whatever, as long as they're sort of interesting.
I want my Michael
Holt. No, I'm not. You're not wrong.
But there's a reason why you start with Black Lightning. He is the most interesting on several levels of the more diverse characters. The characters that came on in the 70s, he's the most prominent. He had the TV show.
Yes.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. You can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give the $5 higher level, you get a patron power live on the show, which I forgot to prepare for, so that's why we're going to start with Josh.
Adam Northcutt has amazing superpowers, strength, flight, invisibility, and vulnerability, but only when he's performing the duties and job of a butler. So he has to put on the tuxedo and he has to serve somebody. And in doing those things, then he has incredible powers.
Wasn't there an Astro City character, the gentleman, who's just a guy in a suit?
Yeah, but he could use that outside. This guy can only use it in his performance and in his duties as a butler.
Assuming subservience to someone else, does he gain superpowers?
Mm-hmm.
And so he just uses it in the course of his duties.
Yep.
He can clean really fast. And
so, like, my building that I live in D.C., it's an apartment building, but it's technically called a manor. So could he come, like, could he do stuff here? If it's technically a manor?
Yes.
All right.
I don't know. I got to tell you, I don't know the rules of butlery, so...
If there are any butlers listening, please write in and tell us the rules.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot to it that we don't get.
Don't they have to be told to write in by someone else? Are we allowed to command butlers to do things?
They're not slaves.
Isn't Alfred technically a valet? That's what somebody watched Downton Abbey told me that.
And Alfred's covering a lot of
ground. Alfred's doing all the jobs. He's the chef, he's the valet, he's the butler.
The driver?
He's literally everybody who goes and eats in that basement.
Yeah, but the butler is like the head of the staff, the forward-facing, the public-facing staff member who's like the red-hand man of the... So yeah, I think Alfred's everyone in the staff, because the butler's the forward-facing guy. He's the one in charge, but Alfred also cooks, he cleans, he drives, he sutures, he trains weaponry, he does.
You're going to tell me that that's not a superpower on its own in its own right?
His life would be a lot easier if he had superpowers.
There's no way he doesn't consider Bruce his son, because you wouldn't do that for anybody else.
Most of the rooms in Wayne Manor aren't getting used most of the time, mm-hmm. so I think that cuts down on a lot. The cave's going to be filthy no matter what. It's full of bats and guano. I think the only thing he ever makes is cucumber sandwiches and tea. So it can't be that hard.
He's really busy. What do you expect?
Thad Haynes! You know I love coming up with a name to go with my powers. He's the Carbonator. He can carbonate anything.
We've definitely had that power before, but that's okay.
No, I've definitely heard that power.
I checked the spreadsheet! Really?
Yeah.
We've definitely had it before. It's fine. After 700 of these things, you're going to get some overlap.
I did come up with a distinct riff on this power, in addition to being able to carbonate things, is when he carbonates things, he's actually drawing down carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. So if he carbonates he could fix global warming.
So, okay, though, here's the question, though. If you've drawn the carbon out of the atmosphere and you just leave the beverage out to go flat, is it a zero gain?
Yeah.
Okay. Further, when you take the when you drink the carbonated beverage, is it also like, does that just come out? Like if you burp, that's just the same stuff.
I think so.
Okay. So really, you've added the thing that you know, it's a thing. Like I stayed at this eco-friendly hotel, and basically what that meant is that they gave you pens that had cardboard instead of plastic for the main tube.
Sure.
And in order to use the heat, you had to put your key card in the door. Other than that, totally normal hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we do, Josh. We send Thad to the moon. A lot of water on the moon, we're learning. Get that water into a liquid phase. Somehow, he carbonates it up there. The carbon dioxide still comes from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So we just teleport it to the moon using his power, but we have to figure out a way to send Thad to the moon first.
All right.
There you go. Brian Wilder can manifest any slippers on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of slipper he wants. He wants big fuzzy bunny slippers. He can have those. He wants real nice, warm, like lambskin moccasins. He can do those.
So, Connor, here's my question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in the market for, or have you just received new slippers?
My feet are cold, and I'm looking. Okay. My slippers are about 10 feet away from me, and I can't reach them. I'd love to just manifest them on my feet.
Are they perfect right now? Are they worn? Do they need replacement? My slippers need replacement.
I love them so much, but they've been spilled on. There's a couple of spots. Like I was wearing them yesterday while cooking because it was chilly here in LA, and there was at some point some drop of something.
Is there a back to them?
Are they full? Like they're full foot slippers.
That's nice.
Yeah, I don't like the slip-on slippers. I like a heel.
I had a pair of them that I didn't want, but they've actually been pretty good. Although they're at the end of their days, so I think I'm going to go back to a heel element.
My sister at one point had like big fuzzy tiger slippers that were slip-ons, and they almost fit my whole foot, and I would walk around wearing those, and they were great.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Both of those, her with them and you with them also.
They were great. All right, so there you go. Patreon.com/fanboy. We're going to leave Josh to go deal with stuff.
Yeah, it turns out that I'm supposed to be on a work meeting right now.
So Josh has to go, which is, look, yeah. We got him for most of the show this year, as opposed to not getting him on these shows. So thank you, Josh. We'll talk to you later.
All right, talk to you later. Love you both. Bye-bye.
Bye, Josh.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go, like we said before, at the $5 or higher level. You can get your superpower live on the show, or you can vote in a patron pick. But you can also add content to the iFan base. The Booksplode show we do, the Talksplode show, the Mediasplode, all unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. The next unlock is a G.I. Joe animated show, which will look at each episode of the G.I. Joe animated series like we were doing early in the pandemic when there was no comics to talk about. That'll happen if you go to patreon.com/iFanboy. And then right after that is unlocking a quarterly barbecue video show like we used to do on the old bar video show. So you can find all that. Plus, there's great community there. There's a Discord server. There's a Facebook group. They all like to chat and hang out on there. They rally for the patron pick. There's alternate factions. Each side is it's becoming like a Braveheart situation.
I'm usually in there pushing whatever the latest Power Rangers book is.
Yeah.
You guys, if you don't remember the video barbecue shows, we got to get those back because there's an ineffable magical quality to the way Josh judges Ron while they're both cooking.
There's all kinds of psychological elements of this.
Oh, the mind games you guys play with each other. When Ron gets the tongs and moves the steak before yeah. Josh thinks it ought to have been moved, it's just, ugh, chef's kiss.
None of us can eat like that anymore, if you watch, but we could certainly do a barbecue show like that. It would be fun. So go patreon.com/iFanboy. Listen, times are hard for a lot of people. We understand if you can't support the show directly, but if you can, we really do appreciate it. It helps us keep going. It keeps the lights on. iFanboy.threadless.com is where you can find our t-shirts. If you need some shirts for the winter, you can get them on sweatshirts. You can get them on long sleeve tees. You get our designs and all kinds of shirts. They're all over at fanboy.threadless.com, including the Stay Home and Read Comics shirts, which is still relevant to the world. I wore mine the other day on a work call. It is still the watchword of the day. Stay home and read your comics. You can get that at fanboy.threadless.com. And then fanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out directly via PayPal. If you just want to leave a tip in the tip jar, don't want to become a patron, don't want to buy a t-shirt, those you don't have to do any of that stuff. But if you feel like you just want to throw some coins in the tip jar at the end of the year, fmo.com/support, fmo.com/Amazon. You can find our Books Blood books and a general link for shopping. We thank everyone who helps the show going. It is not an inconsiderable amount of money to run the show, and we do appreciate it.
My appearance fees alone.
Ryan bankrupts us. That's why he's only on select times. His rider is expensive.
I said only green M&Ms.
So let's skip the email since we went long. Actually, let's do one email. Let's just do one email, a quick one. Jonathan says, I've been thinking for literally months about my guilt over reading books through my library's digital reader. I used to have a large pull list, and before that, the Wednesday browse was a highlight of my week. However, life got in the way, and I still have a stack of paper comics from my last trip to the LCS in February that I have not read. It's not about the cost, but since I have so little time to read books, I find myself drawn to reading well-regarded collections which are freely available through my library app. Should I feel guilty about not buying comics? I keep a pull list of comics for my kids, which I pick up every few months, and I buy the occasional trade of favorites. No.
No, don't feel guilty.
No.
No. Your library pays for those comics.
It's yeah, those are licensed by the library and they're paid for.
Yeah. It's You're not stealing anything. The library is a wonderful service. The library is one of those things where we joke about like government services and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those ideas where if you proposed it today, people would be against it. But like they're awesome. Yeah.
You want to give people free books?
You want me, my taxes, to pay for somebody else to read a book? Yeah, I do. I do, because it's a valuable service.
When I was a kid, you know, being significantly older than you, I had a library around the corner from my apartment in Manhattan, and that's where I did all my homework. That's where, like, if I had a research paper, I didn't have the internet. I had to go to the library and go to the card catalog and find books. You know, prior to 20, 25 years ago, that's how people learned things, was they went to the library.
When I took piano lessons, my sister and I took piano lessons, when she was having her lesson, because we had the same teacher, the music store where we went for our lessons was only a few blocks from not the main library in our town, but one of the next town over. And I would just go browse the stacks. Usually, mostly I was just spending time looking up stuff about Bigfoot and aliens. But, mm-hmm. you know, those books were there every time I needed them.
Hey, Mom, I'm going to the library.
Yeah, that's how I talked as a kid.
Kids don't say that now, really.
I don't think anyone outside Brooklyn ever did.
No. So yeah, no, don't feel bad about it. I think everyone should read comics the way that fits their life. If that means not going to the store every week or not even getting digital books every week and just reading collections, you should do whatever you want. That's why comics are available in different formats. That's why comics are available in different venues. They're there to be read. If they didn't want you to read them that way, they wouldn't license them to libraries. You know, they collect books for a reason. There's lots of people who prefer reading collections. I prefer reading collections.
Yeah, I go through phases where, like, there are some times where I only want collections or I have, like, a big meaty work to dig into, and there are other times where I want the frivolity of a quick, you know, 10-minute single issue, and I go back and forth, and I think that's fine. And, you know, you still have a pull list. You still go buy your books every couple of months. Like, you're still supporting a local business. I think it's okay to taper off and try things out other ways, and there's nothing saying you can't go back to getting more books in person again when the world settles down a little bit. But I definitely don't feel guilty.
Yeah, that's kind of the great thing about the world is that, in terms of this thing, is that there's options. You know, 25 years ago, you didn't have options. You went to the comic store and got your books. But now you can get them in the library. You can get them on your iPad. You can get comics in all different ways. And that's good because not everyone's life is the same. Not everyone has the same amount of free time. Not everyone wants to read things the same way. So don't feel bad about utilizing a legally approved method of reading books.
Agreed.
So there you go. Contact@ifanboy.com is how you can write in and get your question on the show. We think everyone does that. Let's go through the scheduling for the year. Out now is our Media Splode episode. It came out right before this one. It came out actually on Thanksgiving Day, so you may have missed it. It's our final Media Splode of the year because next month we'll have the All Media Year-End Roundup. But this Media Splode is a little different. We didn't talk about our streaming shows. We just did all sort of high-level discussion topics. We talked about streaming movies and whether or not they were any good. We talked about which streaming service was our preferred ones. We did a little round robin game for that. We all picked our top three. We talked about top five Christmas films, and then we did a bunch of emails that were a lot of fun. And we went long, and the show wouldn't end because Josh and Ron wouldn't shut up. And it was a lot of fun, and it was funny at the end as I got more and more annoyed at them for not ending the show. Check it out. It's right behind the show in the feed. Media Splode number 9. Rest of the year, Josh has a Talksplode scheduled with a really exciting guest. But they're not recording it until December. So his November Talksplode will come out some point in December. I'm not sure when. That's up to Josh. The next episode of Pick of the Week is December 6th. And then the one after that, 761, it comes out December 13th. And that's the final Pick of the Week show of the year. In between that, you're going to have your Booksplode on December 10th. And the Booksplode topic is Dragon Hoops from Gene Luen Yang, our book of the year. So that's our topic for the final Booksplode of the year on December 10th. On December 12th, we'll have our final Hangout of the year, which will be the final one open to everyone. Usually it's just open to patrons. We open it up this year because of the pandemic. But if you are enjoying those hangouts and you're not a patron, you may want to look to become one next year as they go back to being patron only. But that'll be 12-12. Ryan hopefully will be there.
Yeah. What I sound like now is what I sound like a lot of times in the morning after those hangouts.
And yeah. And then the All Media Show, which is the All Media Year-End Roundup, which we've been doing every year since we started the show 15 years ago, will come out December 20th. And then we'll take a break for shows during the holidays. And we'll be back with our first Pick of the Week episode of the new year, January 10th.
I love the year-end media show, but I don't know if I've ever told you guys that. It is literally an episode of the show that I look forward to and get really excited when I see it in my download queue. And, you know, I often, back when I was traveling over the holidays, you know, that was like, oh, yes, this is going to be my airport. Listen.
Well, thank you for that. We do enjoy doing them. And also, it's our most popular show of the year.
Really?
It's always the highest downloaded episode we put out of the entire year. Thank you. It's a lot of fun. Although this year, we haven't even talked about it. I think we're avoiding the conversation because normally it's pretty easy to program, but we're not actually sure what's going to happen on this show. We don't want to break the format, but also like half the format's no longer valid. We'll see. We have to have that meeting soon. Head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can find what the Pick of the Week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following @ifanboy on Twitter. @ifanboycomics on Instagram also has the Best Week of Panels feature. And individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram, J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. That's the only two places you can find Josh and I anymore. And Ryan, you are Haupt on Twitter and Ryan Haupt on Instagram.
Yep.
Hanging in there on Twitter.
Yeah, it's not so, I mean, you know, science Twitter is kind of its own little mini ecosystem. And the drama on science Twitter has been fierce lately. So a lot of interesting.
I'm sure it's full of recriminations, much like the Dr. Doom Richard scenario.
I mean, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people out there getting up to some shady stuff, man. Well, not sure. Quite Dr. Doom level, but we gotta clean house.
Also, as we've been talking about this year, YouTube.com/ifanboy. This was unlocked by the patrons, not the YouTube, but the fact that we're uploading all of our old shows. So if you want to see our old video shows from 2007, 8, 9, and 10, you can go find them at YouTube.com/ifanboy. And we're uploading 3 a week. This week's shows, as I quickly open the page, because the script was updated. This week's show, what day is today? Okay, we had a new comics preview mini episode, which obviously not too exciting. And then we had a show in which we did an email episode answering emails. We did it from the set of Texilla, which was another show on the network we were on at the same time. And then finally, we did a show spotlighting Understanding Comics from Scott McCloud. Those shows all came out this week. As you listen to this podcast, the first mini for next week is my first episode of It Came from the Storage Unit, which is my most proud moment doing the minis. That'll be next week. So that's going on all the ways you can find our content at the end of the year. If you need to find it, that's where it is.
If you dig the show, write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Reviews still are one of the main ways that the algorithm figures out which shows to actually put up top and show to people. So for any show you listen to, a rating or review goes a long way to help make that show discoverable.
You mean like Science Sort Of, your show, which we should have mentioned in the other part, but we didn't do?
I do a show called Science Sort Of. I'm behind on an episode because I'm trying to prepare for my defense, but you know. It's a good show. I have fun with it. Scientists talking about science and drinking beer.
What's your latest episode about?
The most recent episode? That's a good question. Oh, mammoths. We did a mammoth-sized episode. There were hundreds of mammoth skeletons found under the site of a new airport outside Mexico City, which is kind of cool. And there was some genetic analysis of mastodons showing their migratory patterns in and out of North America. So kind of cool. Right. We had two mammoth experts on who are buddies of mine, or proboscidian experts, I guess I should say, because we're just mastodons as well. Yeah, good episode. Help spread the iFanboy love. If you want to also help spread the Science Sort Of love, you can do that too. Please let that be the only thing you spread this holiday season. Yes. Stay safe out there. Wash your hands. I'm Ryan.
I'm Connor. See you next week.